I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better. Today, I'm joined by Sophia Peterson, Community Manager, APOG Labs. Sophia's path into the role of Community Manager, and indeed into the video games industry, is not a straightforward one, and hopefully we can hear about that during our conversation today. Welcome to the show, Sophia.
Thank you so much, Steve, for having me. It's really fun to be here.
And as I often say to guests, I'm really sorry that I butchered the pronunciation of your name. Would you like to say your name properly for the benefit of the listeners?
Yeah, so it's a Swedish name, so it's pronounced. In Swedish, you say Sofia Pettersson, but it's fine.
Now, Sophia, on your LinkedIn profile, you've written this little expression, which I love. The phrase community creator by day, artist by night describes me best. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I feel a bit cocky when you say it out loud. Yeah, obviously, I work as a community manager at the gaming studio where I work at. But on my free time, I've always loved to do a lot of creative stuff. So I paint and draw and knit and sew clothes and everything. So that's kind of like the artist's thing of it. But compared to my colleagues who work as 2D or 3D artists, I'm not an artist. I'm just a hobby, just for a hobby.
I think that's actually the nicest way of doing art. My hobby is playing the piano, and I would never do it in public or anything. It's 100% for me. I'm not a great musician, but this thing of having a creative thing I do for myself, I think it's a really, really good thing. So yeah. I like your hobbies.
Yeah, so do I. I feel like it's a big part of my identity at this point. I've always loved to create in general, and it's just so exciting to find, you know, kind of new ways to create stuff and explore yourself or your own identity. Yeah.
And does that affect or somehow creep into your day job, the way it affects your work in the day?
I would say yes. I have the benefit of having or needing to do a lot of creative stuff in my day-to-day work. And I really, really, really love that about my job. It's amazing, really.
Great. Now let's go into how you became a community manager. In the intro, I already suggested it wasn't like a typical path or it was a long path. Tell me how you got into being a community manager, and you can tell me in as many words as you want. You can go back to a year ago or to your childhood. It's up to you.
Yeah. So I've always kind of struggled with, the classic struggle, what am I to do with my life, you know? You want something that you enjoy doing and that you can see yourself doing for basically the rest of your life. And so I, for the last couple of 5 years or something like that, I was living, as of right now, I work in the south of Sweden in Malmö. But before that, I was living in by the middle of Sweden, almost a bit north of Stockholm, in a city called Uppsala, and there they have a big university, University of Uppsala, and so I was studying there, and I managed to get some jobs that eventually led up to a full time job as a alumni coordinator, and I was kind of, you know, I was happy with it, but it wasn't like I wasn't very passionate about it. And then when I had been working there for like a year or so or something, I saw actually a company in Malmö called Shark Mob, a gaming company, that they had put out a position for a narrative writer for a game. And I just kind of said to myself, oh my God, this looks so exciting, because I love to create, and I've studied a lot of language at the university. So I love to write and stuff as well, and not only do visual things. And so I felt that that would be something that would suit me very good. And I had also been, thinking about maybe getting into the, what's that called? Like the museum industry to write, okay. I was thinking about that. And then I kind of saw narrative writing within games, and I thought, oh, that sounded even more interesting. But I did not dare to apply for that position there and then.
Why not?
I was young and stupid. No, I was just, I was a bit, you get a bit self-aware, I guess. And I obviously didn't have any background or any what's that called?
Like experience in that exactly, just type of work.
Yeah. So I just didn't do that. And also it didn't really work with how my life was that at that point. So I continued to work at the university and, you know, things went by. And then one day, maybe a year and a half ago, my life really took an 180 turn for the worse at that moment.
Okay.
It was really not nice. And I had to quit my job. I had to move back to my parents' place because I didn't have anywhere to live. And my parents live in the south of Sweden. So I had to move across Sweden over the course of 2 weeks. So I wasn't really prepared for that. And then, it was hard.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but it ended up something good eventually. I was kind of, starting again at square one, I felt like. And then I needed to look for jobs here in the south of Sweden because I decided that I'm going to stay down here now. I'm not going to move back. And so I applied for some different jobs and I still had the kind of thought about the gaming industry at the back of my head. And so I applied for a couple of different jobs, both within the games industry and some others. And then I eventually found this position. After looking for a couple of months, and I kind of felt that this position really, fit me both with in terms of my interests, but also my skill set from being an alumni coordinator at the university. It kind of overlaps a bit. It's kind of in the same ballpark-ish. Mm-hmm. And they decided to take a chance on me and I got the job. And
so
that's kind of like my story into my journey into the position I have right now.
It's really unique. Often with people working in the games industry, it's something they've wanted to do since they were 12 years old or something. Yeah. I think it's really nice to get people from different spheres and experiences in. You said in the university role where you managed the alumni, it was quite similar. So I guess the alumni were like the players. Is that
exactly
the parallel? Okay, yep. And then you have to listen to them and get their input and so on.
Yeah.
This is great. And what game are you working on now at APOG?
I'm working with a game called Atmosphere. It's still a working title. The title is set, but the game is still in work. It's not been released yet, but they have released another game before called Airport CEO. But I'm not working with that one at the moment. It's only Atmosphere.
I noticed that on the LinkedIn profile for APOG Labs, they've started posting about Atmosphere. And when I say they, I assume that's actually you as the community manager. Yeah. It's that really strange thing where you have to write your own posts in the first person and really like casual, but then you also have to write the company ones. And I have the same thing of my own company. I write.
Yeah.
Some of the social posts for the company.
Yeah, I felt like it kind of takes you a while to kind of get into which language you're supposed to use and which tone and kind of like finding the right voice both for the company. And it's a trial and error process, I would say.
So what platforms are you using to do work with community management in APOG Labs? Like which social media and other platforms?
Yeah, so we were obviously we use LinkedIn for more just from the company itself, but for promoting. So I work a lot with promoting, obviously, and marketing at the moment because we don't really have a game yet. So I'm trying to create some hype. And we use TikTok and... Okay. We use TikTok is the one that's going the best for us, I would say. And we also mirror everything we post on TikTok onto YouTube Shorts. Mm-hmm. Then we have our own website for Atmosphere where I put the dev blogs, and then I also post the dev blogs on Steam, of course. We're also using Blue Sky.
Okay. And I'm on Blue Sky. It seems to be relatively low traffic. Like I struggle to get traction there. What's been your experience with Blue Sky?
So we have some people who's working with more like only marketing as well. And they're the ones who handle Blue Sky. So I don't personally handle Blue Sky myself. But it seems like a kind of like a slow burn maybe. Mm-hmm. I can see that it's like, I mean, it's nothing compared to the responses we get on TikTok where you can go viral overnight and, well, you have a thousand views and the thousands of views and, you know, everything. But I would say that it's slowly like going up, but the numbers are not comparable to TikTok, for example. But it's exciting to see what's going to happen with Blue Sky. And then we have our, we have like APOG Labs has their own blog forum or what you call that, both for Airport CEO, and then we have a subcategory for Atmosphere where I post things as well. And then we use Instagram too, but it's mostly TikTok. That's the biggest one for us, I'd say.
Oh, that's really interesting. I saw recently some industry news that YouTube has become really important for game discovery, but I'm hearing that TikTok is actually more important or working even better for you.
Yeah.
This is nice to share. I mean, this is the stuff we all want to know, right? How do we actually get people to know about what we're doing?
Yeah, but it's, you know, even if TikTok is, it's obviously one that's working best for us. And I would say that TikTok, at least in my experience, is one of the biggest platforms there is at this moment. I would still say that, you know, going viral on TikTok is kind of key, you know, to get people to even notice you in the first place. But I would say that going viral takes a bit of, you can't just post a video and then expect it to, you know, take off. You have to. One thing that I've learned with doing videos and stuff is that you really, really have to keep it as fast as you can. You have to, as the scenes, the shots have to be like 1 second for each shot. Otherwise, wow, people are going to lose interest. It's really, really difficult because you want to showcase so much from the game, but you can't do that because it's going to take too long of a time. So, yeah. Yeah, you have to think about when you're editing videos for TikTok.
Oh, there's so much energy and so much effort.
Yeah.
Listeners, I have to say that before these interviews, I always brief people in advance the questions I'm going to ask. And we've gone completely off track. I did not warn Sophia in advance that I was going to ask her about what social media works. And I really appreciate that you went down that path and that you actually were able to do it so eloquently. But let's go back more into the topic of community management and your story. So do you have any memorable experiences as a community manager in the, what, seven months, is it, since you've been working at APOG Labs?
Yeah, I think I started by the beginning of November. And I think I told you that before, that I think it's a bit difficult to find like a specific, like this specific moment is one that I really remember. But I would say that in general, how I view my job is... you know, I work with both the external community and the internal community. So I work with hopefully what's going to be our players in the future. But I also work with, you know, doing things for my colleagues, planning events, doing, you know, summer party or, you know, stuff like that. And or team building experience things, yada, yada. And, you know, when I think about my job, I think it's so fun because I feel like my job is both on the external and internal side is essentially just to give people a good time. And I just think that's so amazing that I get to do that for a living and I get paid to do that. It's so fun. So to create like, you know, nice experiences for people in the way that I can, both for my colleagues and for the players or the fans or the audience or what you want to call them.
How does that differ? Giving the players or the players to be the external people a good experience or fun and giving your internal team? How does that differ?
So, I mean, a big factor, like the biggest factor, obviously, is that I get to meet my colleagues every day and I get to talk to them, obviously. Whereas with the players, it's more of, you know, there's always this boundary because we're bound to digital screens or whatever. And so you don't really get the same kind of connection to people or to individuals rather as I do with my colleagues. And so when I'm working with my colleagues, I mean, we're kind of a small studio. I think we're 15 people as of right now. And so it's easier for me to kind of give that individual, you know, attention or, have that relationship, you know, professional, obviously, but, you know, have that closer relationship to a colleague than to a fan and or a player. And when it comes to players, there's more that I have to give them something all of the time. I have to come up with things to give them. Whereas with my colleagues, I can kind of like see, I can see what they're doing and I can be more passive in that kind of relationship because I can comment on what they're doing or hype them up because they're doing an amazing job. So that's kind of the difference. And it's more, I mean, both of them are very, very hands-on, but I can't plan a party for the or a team building thing for the players. That's not really how it works.
So you're saying that with the team you work with, you can see what they're doing and respond to that. So this is great. You always have something you can say and talk about. But with the players, how do you face the challenge of always having to be producing more for them? It's more content in various forms.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm still figuring that one out. You have to be really, really creative in general, I think. Because a lot of things in our game is that we have, you know, the idea or the decision has been made. So we know that this is going to be in the game. And I need to kind of show that to the audience that this is what the game is going to be like. But maybe we haven't pushed it or built it in the game yet. So there's nothing visual for me to kind of show them. And that's where you have to be really creative and kind of think about how can I communicate this not only through text, because that's people like visual stuff.
You
have to be really inventive in how you do things, and maybe you have to create something on your own. Obviously labeling it as like concept art or whatever, so they know that this is not a photo from the game. You have to be really transparent with everything you do, but still kind of creating something on your own, but still keeping it true to the idea of the developer, so they don't feel like I've gone rogue and just done something on my own. You know, it's a fine line to thread, and kind of think about how you can maybe use kind of the same imagery or the same scenery or whatever from the game, and then kind of build a story around it in different ways, so it still feels like it's something new for the audience, even though I kind of essentially use the same material. But it's a working process, that one.
Hey listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com. I guess going back to where we started the conversation, this is where your creative nature, when you're working at home on your own hobbies, this probably is where it creeps into your daytime work, right? Having to be thinking all the time what you can do.
Yes, for sure. And then also, obviously, not only coming up with how you can do that, but also actually doing it. I mean, I have colleagues that help me, of course, but I mean, it's also up to me to kind of, you know, take the pictures for the dev blog and record content for TikTok and then edit that content for TikTok and everything. So it's I also have to think about what can I do? What am I capable of doing in terms of my own ideas here? So yeah, it's a balance, and it's a lot of, my bosses has had that kind of mindset ever since I started. And I think it's a really good one, at least for us as a studio. The way we work is that we do a lot of trial and error, especially when it comes to marketing and community. And so we try to keep a really open mind, and like, if you have an idea, try it out, see if it works. If it doesn't work, okay, it's not the end of the world that it doesn't work. Just try something else. And I think that's very, it fits me very well to kind of work that way, both because I am the way I am and also because I'm quite new to this industry in general. So everything is kind of new for me here. So it's just good that I can kind of feel, you know, secure in that my bosses and my colleagues kind of give me that space to try things and don't, you know, scold me if it doesn't become perfect at the first try.
It's really nice to have permission to try and fail and try again and maybe on the third or the fifth or the tenth time succeed.
Yeah.
I am my own boss, and I have to remind myself to give myself permission to fail.
Yeah.
in a similar way, and not beat myself up if something doesn't work.
Yeah.
So if you're doing stuff on TikTok, I guess you have some skills when it comes to video editing. I think this is a common theme in for people not seeing the video here, there was a look that said, well, I don't know, maybe you say that. But I think this is a common theme for community managers, is you need to have these skills right across a whole lot of different ways of communicating. And maybe not all of us have those skills, but do you have particular ones that you lean into?
Particular skills in content creation. Yeah, I understand. I was just, this is a bit awkward for me as a Swede, because it's very, in Swedish culture, you're not like allowed to say anything good about yourself, you know? So they're putting me on the spot here.
Pretend you're American for the next 1 minute.
Yeah. In general, I would say that I don't know like anything when it comes to video recording or video editing. I have never done that before, ever in my life. So that's something that I'm still learning a lot about still. In general, I would say that I don't have any formal education on marketing or, taking pictures or, creative things like that. I don't have any formal education, but I think it kind of served me very well that I've always had those interests in creating different types of things. And I've designed some posters on my own, and I do a lot of paintings and stuff like that. So I would say that I have an eye for it, I suppose you could say, I can't really put words on it. I can't say why this picture looks good and why this one doesn't, but I can tell the difference. So I just kind of do it. And yeah.
I wish I had that ability.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what you said about the Swedish culture, in which you're not allowed to talk too positive about yourself. I'm from New Zealand, and we have exactly the same culture. We call it the tall poppy syndrome. The idea is, in a field of poppies, if one grows higher than all the rest, it just gets cut down.
Yeah.
And I struggle with this a lot myself, that I'm not allowed to say that I'm good at something if I feel I am. And, I left New Zealand a long time ago, but that's still so strong in inside myself.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Sweden and New Zealand had this similarity.
No, I had no idea either, but that's the case. Yeah. So it's really, but that's one thing that I like about my job, not in terms of for myself, but I mean, obviously most of my colleagues are Swedish as well. We have some that live in Denmark, but most of them are Swedish. So, they have, and I've come to understand that this is a general thing in the games industry as well. I think that people really struggle in general to kind of be proud of their work. And I really understand that, especially as an artist, that most of them are in some kind of way, that it's, you're never really, content or really happy with something. You could always do more on your picture or on your project or whatever. And I, this is something that I see with my colleagues. And that's why I really like my position or the things that I get to do. It's so fun to kind of, take everything that we get from social media, all the comments and all the likes and everything, and just kind of push it onto my colleagues. And like, there you go. I said that you were awesome from the first thought. Look at it. Everyone is agreeing with me. And that's
fantastic.
Yeah. So I really like that I can do that for my colleagues. And I feel like they maybe have it. I mean, they struggle with, accepting it, like truly accepting it for themselves. But I think it makes it a bit easier for them to accept it when it's not only me who says it, but it's all everyone else that sees our things as well, our stuff.
Hearing you just talk about this, I find it ironic that the Swedish video games industry is a mega success story. Like most countries, the video games industry body looks to Sweden and say, how can we be like Sweden? And yet there's this sense of like, it's not as good as I want it to be. That's really, really insightful to hear.
Yeah.
Hey, let's move back. Oh, sorry.
And I just wanted to add that that's one thing that I thought about, that I think it's speaking about how I am such a good person, I'm so talented, is that I think honestly that it's kind of good that I don't have a background within the games industry. for when it comes to hyping my colleagues and everything, because I mean that's obviously a big part of my job to kind of hype them up as well. And I feel like I've started to learn how games are being created and how you work with them and everything, but I'm still learning and I don't know much about it. And I think it's kind of good because in my perspective, I don't know anything about it. So for me, what my colleagues are doing, they're creating magic. It's magic. It's amazing. Yeah. I'm so amazed by my colleagues. And I think that's a good, I don't think I would maybe have that kind of same perspective if I had like a big background, a long background from the games industry, because I would, you know, you kind of get blind to it a bit. So I think that's helpful. So hire people outside of the games industry as well.
You're right. It is magic. It is. I have a background as a coder, but I still find it magic what the games industry creates.
Yeah, for sure. It's. I can talk about that for ages, but I'm not gonna do it today.
Well, let's move on to our next topic. What or where do you learn how to do your job as a community manager better?
Yeah, that's also a good question. So when I started, my closest boss, he gave me some suggestions for YouTube videos. It was recorded talks from GDC, especially about community. And so I listened to those, and then I kind of found other videos as well. And I mean, nowadays it's kind of hard to find the time to sit down to watch a YouTube video for an hour in your day-to-day work. But when it comes to creating special videos or something, sometimes I've found some people on YouTube that I think have good advice and like very hands-on advice that describe things in the way I can understand it. And then
YouTube videos giving advice specifically for making game related content or just general? Okay.
Game related content. Unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the channel right now. Otherwise, I would say it. But then also in general, I'm very open towards my colleagues. Most of my colleagues have a lot more experience within the games industry than I do. So usually they can give me good advice as well. And then we have a very strong, as a studio, I would say that we have a very strong network here in Malmö, the city that we're in. And so there's usually a lot of events going on from time to time, quite often. You know, sometimes it's just a evening where you get to mingle. Sometimes it's something more like a discussion or a seminar or whatever. And I try to go.
This is not just your studio, but across the games industry in Malmö.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And so I try to find relevant things that I can attend. And I usually try to take the time to actually attend them. And then I'm attending a mentorship program.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that's really, really good for I think it's for women within games. And so I have a mentor who's kind of, I don't know if her position is community manager, but we work with very similar things. So she obviously has a lot of more experience than me. So I meet her once a month and have a coffee and talk just in general about my job. And it's such a good thing to have. It's really, really amazing.
I agree 100%. I think it's the best thing anybody can do in their industry, in their work careers, have a mentor, someone who's just been there already and can listen and guide.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's really good.
So do you remember any what GDC videos you watched? Were there lots? Was there one or two in particular?
I don't remember them like by their specific name. I just know that I found a lot of there were a lot of talks about community management in general. And I think you can just I guess I did that as well. If you just kind of go to Google, go to YouTube, and then kind of just search for community management games industry or something like that, I think you could find something good, and then kind of like just look at the recommended videos and stuff. I think it's a good thing to kind of just keep your, how do you say that? Just keep an eye out all the time. That's what I do. And it's something I feel like you have to do as a community manager anyways, when you're working with social media, both for marketing atmosphere, but also for my own sake, to just kind of, you know, if you see something that sounds or seems interesting, you take a closer look at it and maybe this is something I can use or something I can learn from or yada, yada, yada. And then obviously when when I started writing, so as I said, we do a lot of trial and error. And so when we are, when we want to try something new or something that we haven't done in terms of our game yet with the marketing around that, I sometimes we kind of look at other studios, how did they do this thing that we want to do? Is there any trend going on or what worked? How many comments or likes did they get when they did this? Should we do the same kind of thing or should we, you know? So you kind of take inspiration as well, not copying, but taking inspiration and just kind of see what seems to, you know, take off or really land well for the audience. And then what doesn't, obviously. Yeah.
Let's say the listener is starting their very first job next week as a community manager.
Yeah.
Like you were not so long ago, they're brand new to the role.
Yeah.
What tips do you have for them for what they can do in their first week on the job?
Oh, yeah, that's also a good question. When I started,
I'm asking you this one specifically because this should be quite fresh in your memory.
Yeah. So when I started, I just tried to learn as much as possible. And I I had a lot of whimsical ideas at the beginning because I didn't really have an understanding to how everything works within this industry and how you do with what you do with games and stuff. And so I kind of wrote all of my ideas down. And then as I learned more things, I got new ideas and I wrote everything down. And now when I revisit that specific document, I'm kind of embarrassed because many of those ideas were so unrealistic and just not good ideas. But I think it's a good thing to just kind of, I think still it was good to kind of write down my ideas that I got from when I started to learn things as a, like a because you can't, both for your own sake, you could kind of like really see how much you learn. You can see your progress. And I also think that sometimes the best ideas come when you haven't been like, I don't know how to say that, like colored or biased by your work yet. So I think that was a good thing. And in general, I think, I mean, at least in my studio, as I said, I have the benefit of being able to try things without being scolded if it doesn't work. So I think dare to try things. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And that's just don't do it again. Try something else. And then also just, at least in my position, you have to wear a lot of different hats all of the time. So also be prepared for that. Just, you know, before I've gotten a new colleague now that handles those things instead. But before I was also like kind of office manager as well. So you have to, you know, like create this super big marketing campaign, but then you have to, you know, take a pause on that because you need to sort out the trash sorting system for the office. And, you know, it's very, so you have to be really flexible in your mindset, I would say, and be able to kind of jump between different projects, you know, during even the same day and kind of, And ask your colleagues, like if there's something you don't know or don't understand, ask them. People in general like to tell you about their job or their, you know, their experience. So just ask people. Dare to ask the stupid questions. That's usually what I do. And it's worked for me.
I really like the idea of writing down all your thoughts in the first week or two, the first few weeks, and then and ongoing, and then revisiting. I think that's a real morale booster when you go back and look, oh, I have developed. I would never think of that thing that I had back there. But look, I also had some pretty good ideas too, right back at the beginning.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah. And you could, I feel like even though some of my ideas were very, we can't use them at all. But I still feel like sometimes you can take kind of like the core of the idea and then kind of transform it so it can work when you know more. So that's something I would say. Yeah.
Sophia, last question, and this is a very important question. What game have you been playing lately?
Oh, I am kind of, I know that I'm late on it, but I'm playing Red Dead Redemption 2.
Wow. How do you find time for that with your hobbies that you were told us about drawing and knitting and sewing? How on earth can you have time for Red Dead Redemption
2? Yeah, I don't. That's the issue. You know, that's the issue with having too many hobbies is that you always mm-hmm. have to sacrifice something in order to be able to do something else. But I got an amazing apartment where I live next to my best friend. And so they have a PS5 at home uh-huh. and I don't. Uh-huh. So I usually go to her place and hang out a bit. And then I play Red Dead Redemption and she's watching when I play it. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I bought Red Dead Redemption 2 and I played like the first like tutorial chapter, which was taking hours. And after that, I thought... I can't play this game. I just do not have the time to commit to the game.
But you're gonna have to find time for that game because it's amazing. I hope you haven't gotten any spoilers about the game because it's a very, very strong story.
I haven't. I have a young child at home, and at the moment, well, first of all, I can't play such a violent game while she's around.
Yeah, of course.
And second, like having a child just takes a lot of your free time, and now we play like cozy games together, my daughter and myself, but we're a long way from being ready for a game like Red Dead Redemption 2.
I get that, but you need to find the time at some point in your life because it's the best game I've ever played.
Well, that's high praise. All right, Sophia, that's all we have time for today. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun to be here.
And where can people get in touch or find out more about you and what you do?
They can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I would prefer people to contact me if they wanted to.
Okay, and I'll make sure we have that link in the show notes.
Yep, and it would be very fun if someone wanted to talk to me. Just feel free. I'm very open and friendly.
Maybe you can be the mentor for the next generation of community managers.
Give me a couple of years and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, bye, Sophia. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.